Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Updates. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on the Geary Community School Corporation being approved to defer some loan repayments. Brandy Smith reports on new laws in Indiana that took effect July 1st, and Chris Nolte has a conversation with NFIB State Director Barbara Quant as she brings us up to date on how small businesses are responding to reopening during the coronavirus pandemic. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. The Geary Community School Corporation has been given approval to move forward with a plan to defer some loan repayments, freeing up funds for school improvements and building demolition over the next 4 years. The State Board of Finance unanimously approved a proposal Tuesday morning to delay repayment and extend by 54 months the terms of 9 common school fund loans taken on by the cash-strapped district to help cover operating expenses. The plan, which will see about $470,000 made available to the district monthly over the course of 4.5 years, is made possible under a new state law. The proposal received the approval last week from Indiana's Distressed Unit Appeal Board, which oversees turnaround efforts in the state takeover school district. Under the plan set forward by Geary School's takeover team, school improvements will come in 8 phases as funds become available each month, totaling about $25 million in the 4.5-year period. The Times reports the Geary School's emergency management team sought community feedback on desired projects in May. Eric Parrish of emergency management provider MGT Consulting said roofing repairs, boiler replacements, and security upgrades were among the most requested. Immediate projects to begin this summer include roof replacements in critical areas at Westside Leadership Academy, at Bethune Early Childhood Center, as well as Geary Middle School, where existing boilers are about 60 years old. Additional projects include paint and project signage and rekeying doors through a digital key management system. The first phase will also include ongoing abatement and demolition of unused Geary School properties in coordination with the City of Geary. Parrish goes on to say that all spending from the School Improvement Fund must be approved by the state's Distressed Unit Appeal Board. District leaders will report back monthly on the progress and make a control document available to the public detailing project budgets, expected completion timelines, and changes in repair proposals. The proposed projects will both lend themselves to academic improvements in an upgraded learning atmosphere and enrollment gains for the district via appealing school buildings. The district is also working to develop an accountability plan for its exit from the distressed unit status. This plan, created with community feedback, will outline a roadmap to ending the state's takeover of the Geary Community School Corp within the next 3 years and will be made available on the school district's website and social media this August. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. Governor Eric Holcomb announced Indiana will largely press pause on its reopening plan instead of moving to the final phase this weekend. The state was set to enter Stage 5, which imposed virtually no restrictions on store and restaurant capacities or gathering sizes. Instead, Holcomb says current capacity and gathering limit will remain for another 2 weeks.
This gives all of us a little more additional time to manage our way through this.
Holcomb says he's pressing pause because of recent upticks in hospitalization rates and the percentage of Hoosiers testing positive for the virus.
It's a very volatile environment out there around the country, and it is in the state of Indiana as well. We're not immune to that fact.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. The state of Indiana is launching a public service campaign to urge Hoosiers to wear a mask when in public to help reduce the spread of COVID-19. But Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports the governor is still resisting calls to require mask wearing.
Other states, notably Arizona, Florida, and Texas, have recently seen alarming surges of COVID-19. State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box says she hopes Hoosiers see what's happening in those states as proof they need to wear a mask when in public.
Indiana could very easily be in that same situation in the next 2 to 4 weeks or 6 weeks if we don't take this to heart.
Still, Governor Eric Holcomb won't mandate mask wearing.
Because I believe in Hoosiers, and I believe that Hoosiers are doing the right thing for the most part.
Yet Holcomb says he supports local governments and individual businesses that decide to impose their own mask-wearing requirements. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Every utility in the state won't be allowed to disconnect service for unpaid bills until August 14th. Governor Eric Holcomb extended the moratorium on shutoffs Tuesday.
Utilities say they've been losing money due to lower energy demand during stay-at-home orders. Meanwhile, they're trying to provide service and flexible payment options for customers. The IURC says it might consider letting utilities recover other losses due to COVID-19, but it says it's unreasonable to make customers pay for energy they didn't use. Kerwin Olson, executive director of the Citizens Action Coalition, agrees.
It was an extraordinary, if not absurd, request in the wake of everything going on, and shame on the utilities for even suggesting that they wanted to collect that money. But kudos to the commission for closing that door and saying absolutely not.
But this recent order only applies to the utilities the IURC oversees. That means small, unregulated utilities will still be able to shut off service for unpaid bills starting on Wednesday. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Rebecca Thiel.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Using a handheld cell phone while driving will become illegal in Indiana under a new state law that took effect this week. The move, aimed at combating distracted driving, is among numerous laws that went on the books Wednesday. It was approved by the state legislature this year. Other new laws include tougher penalties on stores that sell smoking or vaping products to anyone younger than 21 years, and a requirement that anyone younger than 18 obtain a judge's permission before getting married. The new driving law allows cell phone use by motorists only with hands-free or voice-operated technology, except in emergencies. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
On Wednesday, the Indiana Bureau of Motor Vehicles began charging late fees again. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports late fees had been suspended the last few months due to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Indiana's BMV branches shut down in March as the governor issued a stay-at-home order, and while Hoosiers could still conduct some BMV business online, many transactions that had to be done in person were put on hold, and so the governor suspended all late fees. BMV branches began to reopen in May, with a full reopening earlier this month to walk-in customers. Now, those late fees will also resume. $6 for state IDs and driver's licenses, $15 for vehicle registrations, and $30 for being late to register a title. The BMV is still limiting the number of customers allowed inside branches at one time, and BMV employees who deal with customers must wear masks. Customers are encouraged but not required to do so. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The image of 12 people packed shoulder to shoulder in a jury box is a powerful one.
enshrined in the Constitution and in countless hours on television. But now, court officials around the country are weighing their options while dealing with the looming threat of COVID-19. In Indiana, jury trials resumed on July 1st. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Green has the story.
And we haven't figured this one out.
In May, Allen Superior Judge Fran Gall unveiled the Criminal Division's plans for resumption of jury trials. All plans must be submitted to the Indiana Supreme Court for approval. Allen County's plans include using a lot of space in what is one of the largest county courthouses in the country, with multiple courtrooms to be used for potential jurors. These cavernous main courtrooms provide plenty of room for social distancing, but even with that, there will be little room for observers, including family members, witnesses, and the media.
This has been a process of some depth. I mean, we've tried very hard to protect the safety of the public that are coming into the building, because as you know, the only people that aren't really voluntary participants in this process are jurors.
But what to do with jurors has become quite an issue. While Allen County's courtrooms allow plenty of room for spreading people out, most of Indiana's counties have much smaller courthouses packed to the gills during normal times. James McGuire is one of the staff attorneys for the statewide task force helping Indiana craft its reopening strategies.
How the courts are going to provide for the safety of the jurors, of the litigants, of the attorneys, of the court staff, all those have to be addressed. And they will be different in different counties.
Without a unified court system statewide, no standards for size and operations, this has been a very difficult discussion.
So each of the 92 counties have to set up their own rules, procedures, and the counties are different.
McGuire says some counties are taking different approaches on how to handle personal protective equipment as well. In some instances, counties are finding the supplies for their courthouses, and in other cases, the court staff are having to go out and find their own. Allen County will allow potential jurors over the age of 75 to opt out of jury selection. Other accommodations are available to those between the ages of 60 and 74. Removing whole segments of the population from jury duty does not fit with the idea of the jury as a cross-section of the community, says attorney Jim Abbs. Abbs is the chief public defender in Noble County and president of the Indiana Association of Chief Public Defenders. He is worried about finding jurors difficult during normal times, as well as protecting the rights of defendants who wait their day in court in front of a jury.
I think you'll see that same problem in the larger counties also, because people just are not going to want to participate in it and take that health risk chance to sit on a jury. I mean, it's hard enough to get individuals in their normal daily lives, you know, to have to take off work, interrupt their schedule. Now you've added a health risk to the whole process. It's going to make it very difficult to get individuals that want to be part of the jury process.
Social distancing and masks also make it difficult for trial work. How do you read body language and nonverbal communication when half of one's face is covered?
To have a client in a mask being separated from their attorney isn't how we would normally want to present that individual from there. And is it truly an accurate portrayal of the individual?
So far, remote hearings are working well for managing some of the day-to-day business of the courts, from arraignments to bond hearings.
We have found that it can work well in those proceedings that allow for remote type of hearings.
And some civil court work has moved online or has been delayed. For example, Allen County's Superior Court Civil Division has continued all jury trials until September to allow the Criminal Division's calendar to catch up. Some of these changes and the move away from in-person hearings will probably be with us for a while after the threat of the pandemic has passed. Whether the new measures will work in both protecting public health and criminal justice is unknown, but officials agree there are many headaches ahead as they iron it out and move to reopen. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Rebecca Green.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Democratic gubernatorial candidate Woody Myers unveiled a criminal justice reform plan that mandates new training for police, shifts funding to social services, and decriminalizes marijuana. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports on Myers' wide-ranging proposal.
The Myers plan includes reducing the prison population, investing in minority communities, measures to address police brutality, and more oversight of law enforcement. He does not agree with the phrase defund the police, though parts of his plan align with some who advocate that policy. For instance, he wants to see mental health professionals address what he views as mental health challenges.
I would just prefer that we do more of that so that our police can truly deal with the violent crimes that are out there.
Myers does not call for curtailing the power of police unions, which many have pushed for in recent weeks.
I worry about imposing a set of conditions without the opportunity, at least, for dialogue, without the opportunity, at least, to bring the unions along.
Myers does want greater transparency in police union contracts. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with NFIB State Director Barbara Quant.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. As we still deal with the coronavirus pandemic, we see more and more small businesses in Indiana starting to recover, but not enough of them are recovering. And to find out the latest, let's talk to Barbara Quant. She is the head of the Northwest Indiana Division of the National Federation of Independent Business. And Barbara, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Hello, Chris. It's so good to talk with you again.
Bring us up to date, if you will, on how Hoosier small businesses are doing as they're trying to dig out almost literally from the effects of the pandemic.
Well, as you know, our research foundation has been tracking the effect of coronavirus on the economy and the health of Hoosiers and people all across the United States. And what they found recently, you know how bad it was when I first started talking to you.
That's right.
Well, now we do have a little ray of sunshine here. 27% of the owners reported experiencing a significant or moderate increase in sales due to eased restrictions. And another 27% reported a slight increase. And 42% said sales levels did not change. So roughly over half said we're seeing some rays of light here. We're starting to have increased sales.
Are a lot of the businesses that have started to bounce back, so to speak, they've just been able to get the supplies they need, the PPEs, and make the other changes that they need to make to their facilities to be able to be ready to welcome people back in?
You know, I talk with small business owners every day, and I'm not hearing that they're having any difficulty getting the equipment and supplies that they need. I think Indiana has been particularly good about offering the availability of PPE for business owners all over the state. And so that's not something that they're at least having to face right now.
Are they dealing with the changes that they have to make physically, putting up the sneeze guards and separating and removing tables and chairs and all to be able to get the social distancing requirements met?
Yes, I think the shutdown affected them so deeply that they were basically willing to do anything they could to get things back on track.
I know that
anything they needed to do. So while they may not be happy about having to do it, they are glad to have the opportunity to be in business at all right now.
I know in our past conversations, we've been able to mention, among other people, one particular business owner here in Northwest Indiana that had been fighting his way through the whole process of getting the help that he needed to be able to get his business reopened. Bring us up to date on how Jason is doing. Remind us a little bit about his business and what he's had to do and what it did basically go through here and how he's doing these days.
Well, Jason is a fantastic story. When I first began speaking with you, Jason owns and operates M&M Car Care Center in Merrillville, and then he's got a second location. And when I first started talking with him, he was just desperate. He needed help. There was nothing coming through for him. He hadn't received the PPP, and it was just it was very dire for his situation. Well, I'm happy to say that I just spoke with him, and he says that his business right now is going extremely well.
That's good to hear.
He said he got the PPP, and that came through, and that was helpful, but it certainly he needed more. And then he applied for the EIDL, and that's the disaster loan that has interest, and you pay it back over a period of time. That one came through. He is actually he has hired three more people. So he has actually kept on the staff that he had, that he kept going all during this time when there was no business coming in. And then and he also did something that he had a promotion that he did. He invested in offering a free oil change and lunch to the first responders.
Yeah.
And so that all worked well. In other words, this is the best story that I have heard, and it's right there in your area.
That's great to hear. I know one of the major issues, besides dealing with getting the funding from the federal government through the CARES Act, that you mentioned that Jason's a good example of that had to gone through. I know that many small businesses are still dealing with the issues of unemployment insurance. What stories have you heard from Indiana about how the folks with the Indiana Department of Workforce Development are doing in helping small businesses cope with all of this?
Well, I think as far as the Department of Workforce Development and handling the unemployment, I think they've been doing yeoman's work to get this up and running, a whole new area with the $600 additional funding that was coming per week benefit that was coming from the federal government. And so I think they've done a great job. The problem that we're having with our members are reporting to us is that people don't want to come back to work. When restaurant owners in particular have told me that they go to call people back, and they are either saying they can't come back because they're making too much money on unemployment, or they just don't answer the call.
Yeah.
Or respond. So apparently the $600 additional benefit has actually worked in reverse for small businesses, and it's while helpful, I'm sure, to the people that needed it, they don't want to come back.
Yeah. Now, Barbara, are you noting from the NFIB Indiana members you've checked in with that on that respect that they're having to go out there and beat the bushes looking for new employees because the folks won't come back?
Yes, exactly. If they're on unemployment, they're in no hurry to get back to work. At least that's the sense I'm getting from our members. And so, yes, the unemployment is a problem for Hoosier business owners. So hopefully it won't be continued, because there's an effort to continue that until the end of the year. And if that's the case, some of these people who've suffered through, I mean, the business owners who've suffered through the shutdown and all of that, this was an unintended or unanticipated consequence of the work that was done to help families and small businesses.
Well, it looks like the small business owners didn't anticipate having to go out there and have to put want ads in, so to speak, the way it used to be done to look for those people to fill those positions. Yeah.
Yes, especially with so many out of work.
Yeah.
You think so? I'm sure there are people that are coming back, but they're having to retrain or train people for the job. So my concern is, of course, that we haven't really begun to see the real fallout of this economic crisis, because there are so many different moving parts. I spoke with a one of our members who's in the Indianapolis area who has a firm that works with conventions, and he has no business, zero. In fact, I think he said that there's one potential convention coming into Indianapolis, but he works all over the country.
Yeah.
And so his business is done, and he's just trying to stay alive until something opens up again.
Well, Barbara, thank you for spending time with us with the update. We really appreciate it, and hope to have you back again. And although we see the ray of hope from the small business sector in Indiana and here in Northwest Indiana, we hope that, that we'll have more light come in and more promising things to say in the future. Thanks for spending time with us today.
All right.
Barbara Quatt is the state director of the National Federation of
Independent Business here in Indiana. Regionally speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and streaming online at Lakeshore Public Radio. Where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.